This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. In the spring, a network of at least 125 people who had contracted HIV or syphilis was discovered in Milwaukee. Three of the people infected were Milwaukee public school students, and STIs among 15 to 19-year-olds are on the rise in Wisconsin and across the country. All this led WPR reporter Jimena Condi to wonder what sex education looks like in Wisconsin. She joins us from Milwaukee. Jimena, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So we also want to hear about what you think about sex education in Wisconsin, 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. So Jimena, what made you want to do this story?
So after the story of the HIV and syphilis network broke out, the Milwaukee Health Department and community health leaders really tried to get in front of it. A week after the story broke, they held this large press conference where they cited several resources people in Milwaukee could take advantage of. They offered extended sexually transmitted infection testing hours, also a lot of online resources so people could read up on the consequences of having sex. And they really
unprotected sex in particular.
Yes. And they really, their message was sort of, one, people should know their status if they are sexually active. Two, parents, community members, health leaders, they really stressed this idea that they needed to reach out to young people who were being affected by this increase in STI rates. And so I really wanted to know what sex ed looked like in the Milwaukee public school system, but also across the state. So that's kind of what prompted the story.
In reporting this story, you started learning about sex and curriculums across the state, trying to figure out what they were teaching and what Wisconsin public schools were teaching about STI prevention. In doing that research, you found out that Wisconsin doesn't actually have any requirements for sex ed in public schools. Did that surprise you?
Yes and no. Sex ed requirements, you know, differ across the country. But being new to Wisconsin, I was surprised that in 2012, the state lessened sex ed requirements. So essentially, the way it works now is school districts are not required to teach comprehensive sex ed. And what they call it is human growth and development. So school districts don't have to have a human growth and development program. If they choose to have one, it has to be focused on abstinence only, and the idea that students should wait until marriage in order to have sex. Also, even if school districts choose to teach an abstinence-only curriculum and not teach about family planning and do a comprehensive curriculum on STIs, they still need to go through an advisory panel, which is made up of school board members, parents, and other stakeholders. And then they have to go through this process where they notify parents, this is what we're thinking of doing. And then if the curriculum is approved, parents are still supposed to have an option where they can opt their kids out. So this happens whether a school district says we're only going to teach about abstinence or we're going to do a more comprehensive program where we teach about abstinence plus. So abstinence plus family planning, that sort of thing.
STIs, gender, sexuality, and all that other stuff.
Yes.
You ended up trying to call a bunch of schools all throughout the state to figure out if there were any schools not teaching sex ed to get an idea of what the sex ed looks like when they're teaching it. Did you come away with a good idea of what sex ed actually looks like in Wisconsin?
Absolutely not. I called about maybe 50 school districts out of the roughly 450 school districts in the state of Wisconsin. I didn't get answers from most of the school districts, and from the few districts that I did hear back, at least one school district didn't have a comprehensive sex ed program. And then, for example, the school districts that did have a comprehensive sex ed program, what that program looks like really varies from district to district. For example, one of the school districts that I spoke to said that they were going to cut their comprehensive sex ed program from the high school because they were facing resource restrictions in their budget. So they were only going to be teaching an age-appropriate comprehensive sex ed program in the middle school. Another school district, for example, told me that they went by the suggested Department of Public Instruction sex ed curriculum, but they were hoping to tweak it maybe in the coming year to include more transgender issues. So it's really hard to tell, you know, if there's one particular school district that's doing this amazing job, or even to get a good idea of what their programs look like, because even finding the people who are very familiar with the programs is very hard, and labor intensive. And this is something that people who are pro sex ed and people who want to get rid of it entirely also told me. So, for example, with, you know, math and English, we know that all these students are learning it because we have these standardized tests, right? Mm-hmm. But with sex ed, one, the Department of Public Instruction, school districts aren't required to report whether or not they're teaching sex ed. There's no database, so the picture is very fuzzy. You know, it leaves you with this issue of, well, even if they are teaching sex ed, it's really hard to wean out what these programs look like. I will say, though, the school districts that I did talk to, Milwaukee Public Schools, their sex ed curriculum was crafted with the help of the Department of Public Instruction. And they pull from local health programs. So they get help from Planned Parenthood. They also pull from United Way of Greater Milwaukee and Waukesha County. And they have these health professionals come to the schools and do like little refresher presentations where they go over STIs and condom use, that sort of thing.
So it sounds to me like there's a project here to build a database to kind of centralize the information about sex ed. Are you up for that project?
I mean, I'd like to. Foolishly, that kind of was something that I wanted to do. And then I realized, you know, just calling about 40 school districts, how labor intensive it was. But yeah, I think it would be really interesting to be able to map out exactly when and what students are learning.
Interesting. So your takeaways from this story, are you going to keep following it?
I'd like to. So CDC data shows that 15 to 24-year-olds made up half of the new STD cases in 2016. And again, it seems like this isn't just a Milwaukee County or Wisconsin issue. So I'd like to follow it and also mostly learn. Another interesting fact that I picked up is that teens are reporting having less sex than, you know, their 1993 counterparts. Mm-hmm. So it would be interesting. I think another facet of this would be to try and figure out why STIs are up, considering they're having less sex.
WPR reporter Jimena Condi has joined us to talk about what sex education looks like in Wisconsin. She started to report on it when there was a report of a rise in STI 15 to 19-year-olds. Jimena, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
That last bit that Jimena talked about, fewer kids are having sex, but more kids are getting STIs. We're going to explore that in a minute. What is going on with that? What does sex ed look like in your school? Are kids learning from their schools or from their parents? Are they learning from other kids? that could be worrisome. A couple of 16-year-olds, who knows what they're telling each other. We are taking your calls this hour, 1-800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We want to know what you think about sex ed. Do you want to be able to just teach your kids and not have them hear about sex ed in school? How do you deal with your kids talking to their peers and possibly getting misinformation? 1-800-642-1234 is the number. This is The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. As you heard before the news, WPR's Zima Nakonde opened up a hornet's nest when she tried to explore the state of sex ed in Wisconsin. STI rates are up among teens, in spite of the fact that they aren't having as much sex as their counterparts in the 1990s. Why is that? What information are teens getting about sex? More to the point, what information are they not getting, or are they getting wrong? We're taking your calls and emails this morning about sex ed. What do you think it should be, and what is your child's experience? 1-800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. For the rest of this hour, we're talking to William L. Yarber. He's a provost professor at the Department of Applied Health and Science and a senior scientist at the Kinsey Institute for Research in Sex, Gender, and Reproduction at Indiana University. He's authored four books on AIDS and STD prevention. He's including the country's first secondary school AIDS prevention curriculum. Bill, welcome to the program.
No, good morning. Thanks for having me.
We were talking with Ximena just a minute ago. She is a Wisconsin Public Radio reporter. She said that, you know, she was just doing a routine thing and trying to figure out, you know, trying to answer this question about STIs. And what she discovered was that Wisconsin doesn't really have a sex ed requirement for public schools. Is this common?
Yeah, it is. A lot of schools, state departments of education, are very reluctant to mandate any type of instruction about sexuality beyond abstinence. And so they oftentimes will say that it's local school district prerogative to decide the curriculum. And a lot of schools like to do that because they feel that their community is unique from others and that their issues related to that are different. And so it's difficult to get any kind of government or education leadership beyond teaching about abstinence.
So how many states actually require sex ed? How many don't?
Well, the latest information is that 21 states do not require any sexuality education or any HIV-STI instruction. And so we're really basically having, around 30 states that may do some type of instruction. And so, that's contrary to other fields of schools like science and math, that there's more uniform recommendations. But, of course, when you're dealing with sexuality, every person is a sexual being, and so every person may have their own individual opinions about what young people need to know about sexuality. And a lot of leadership is reluctant to do things that may be controversial in a particular community. And so because of that, we're finding that a lot of people aren't getting the kind of information about sexuality that will help them develop that aspect of their life.
Before we go on, somebody called in and asked what the difference was between an STI and an STD. The difference is the word illness versus the word disease, correct?
Yeah, that's right. We used it a long time ago. We used venereal disease, and then tried to make it more specific, calling sexually transmitted disease, and that's still used by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, but some organizations and professional journals use STI infection, and probably medically that's more accurate because you're more than likely to transmit an infection than a disease.
So when we talk about comprehensive sex ed, what are we talking about? What do kids need to know? And when do we need to start teaching them at a graduated rate?
Well, for one thing, the issue is not whether we talk to them about sexuality or whether they receive sexuality education. They do, particularly even more now relative to social media and the Internet. Mm. But comprehensive sexuality education, that term is often misunderstood. Most individuals, most media groups would consider that to be talking about abstinence, but also exclusivity in a relationship and condom use. And that's a narrow definition of comprehensive. A broader definition of comprehensive would be that it would talk about the physical, mental, and emotional aspects of sexuality, the social aspects, and things beyond just the medical aspects. Currently, any emphasis on comprehensive sexuality education is to prevention of bad problems. I guess all problems are bad, but I mean,
right.
The prevention of STIs, the prevention of unintended pregnancy, prevention of any kind of sexual harassment or abuse or violence. And so that is a narrow definition of what sexuality education is. A more comprehensive or inclusive definition would be that it would also to educate young people about the meaning and role of sexuality in one's life.
Interestingly, you just talked about sexual violence, sexual harassment. There's the term out there, rape culture. How does sex ed play into that or not?
Well, you know, that's a very controversial aspect of mm-hmm. Of sexuality education because of the fact that it's delicate of how to, indicate to young people. It's important to talk to them about boundaries. It's important to talk to them about owning their own self, owning their own sexuality, not sharing themselves in situations that aren't healthy, and then balancing that with an aspect of sexuality education, which would be affirmative of the aspect of the role of sexuality toward the overall total health of the individual. And there have been some efforts recently by state legislative bodies to include sexual harassment or sexual violence education, and that's the beginning of that. Studies indicate that requiring that type of instruction hasn't been successful at this point, but I think it's probably going to get even more important. And part of that is already addressed in a more comprehensive approach of sexuality education when you talk about relationships and gender roles and aspects of what is the components of a healthy sexuality.
We are talking about sex ed in schools. A reporter for WPR found that there's really no comprehensive sex ed in each school district. Each district kind of has their own. And we're taking your calls here this morning, 800-642-1234. ideas@WPR.org is our email. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. One of the things that Jimena found is that some school districts have pretty good comprehensive sex ed, all the way to even dealing with trans issues. Some school districts have hardly any sex ed, just don't do it, and we're not going to talk about anything else. We may talk about your bodies. Is that common to see that striation even within a state?
Oh, yes, it is, because often leadership from the State Department of Education or the state government is very narrow. And there's the philosophy of this is the fact that it's a political issue that oftentimes can result in varied opinions and controversy. And so it doesn't provide the kind of guidance you might in other curricular areas of the school. And each community may feel like, you know, it has its own uniqueness. And so there is some hesitation. There is some fear of talking about things in sexuality education beyond reproduction and beyond the prevention of problems. And just an example here, only 4 states in the United States require any instruction that affirm that there's different gender identities or gender or sexual orientation. 7 states explicitly require teachers to portray lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or queer individuals negatively in instruction, and even prohibit teachers from talking about that particular issue.
Is Wisconsin one of those? Is Wisconsin one of those states? The 7? Okay.
You know, yeah, which one that is. And right. So you can see that teachers are very hesitant to do things that might, you know, be unpopular in the community. Research continuously has indicated that the vast majority of parents want a more comprehensive approach. The vast majority of students want that also. Mm. And it's becoming, I think, even more critical to talk about the various aspects of sexuality because all you have to do is turn on the computer and see all kinds of stuff and read all kinds of material. And some of that is not really accurate, or it portrays sexuality in an unhealthy way. So the issue is not whether young people are being educated about sexuality. They are. It's just a choice that we have, is who do we want to educate? Of course, parents are the primary educators of their children, and that should remain. But oftentimes, parents find it really difficult to talk about those issues, and schools is one avenue that reaches almost young people, and it can supplement what parents do. But we're living in a different world now. We're living in a world because of media, is that we're seeing that there's a lot more variation in aspects of a sexual identity, for example, and that there are some aspects of, you know, laws that begin to affirm that. And so young people are living in a world in which there's a lot more information. Mm. And one way to help them understand that and to integrate into development of their own healthy sexuality is information. In a lot of ways, information frees people from being exploited.
Accurate information, not just any information they may get off the internet. We are talking to Bill Yarber from the Kinsey Institute about sex ed in schools. We're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Now, Bill, you've been writing curriculum for K-12 schools for a long time. What are the best practices for teaching kids? Let's start with younger kids. I mean, obviously, we're not going to teach first graders about having sex, but what should younger kids know about their bodies?
Well, there are guidelines available that are age appropriate, developmentally appropriate, K through 12. And so, you know, the younger individuals acknowledging the facts that, you know, that there's love in the world, that there's that people, you know, are attracted to each other, that that there are parts of their body that private to themselves, and that as they get older, there's some developmental changes in their bodies. And so it's sort of a basic foundation of recognizing, you know, components of their body. Then as they get a little bit older, then we begin to start talking more about, you know, boyfriends, girlfriends, and relationships.
And what age is that? Are we talking like 12? Are we talking 14?
Yeah, well, the belief is that you begin talking about that prior puberty. Mm. Certainly if, because they may begin once they reach puberty to be having make decisions. They may be confused about these feelings. They may not quite understanding them. The discussion and talking about that is important, validating that that's is universal in individuals. And then as you know, informing them as they get older that there's going to be you know, situations where they may have to make decisions about touching or kissing or behaviors. And so the philosophy is that you prepare them before those type of situations arise. It's also the fact that knowledge is not going to be harmful, that actually ignorance is one that's going to be harmful, and prepare them for things that could happen. I think we underestimate a lot of young people's ability to understand and use information. An information that a particular individual may not be pertinent at that time, but the child will oftentimes, I think, sort of file that away in their mind, and then if they get to a situation, they say, oh, yeah, we talked about this in school, and we talked about what this is all about.
So I have a question here. If you don't start talking to your kids kind of about their bodies and getting them comfortable when they're younger, and then they hit puberty, is it too late to start talking to them then?
Well, no, it's never too late in a lot of ways. I mean, we even find that learning about human sexuality in adults are, important. Matter of fact, I'm giving a presentation soon on sexuality and aging. And so information, I think, is always valuable. Once they begin to get into middle school and junior high school, then you should be talking more about the social aspects of sexuality and how culture presents it. And again, I think, that young people are thirsty for this type of information. They know they can turn on a computer and find all kinds of things. Then some would be very alarming and some wouldn't be very accurate. And so they want adults to talk to them about the issues that they're going to be facing, changes in their body, feelings that they have, and affirming those and recognize that those are universal. And that acknowledges the fact that this is, an important and healthy part of life. And then talking about the role that they play in life and the meaning in life and under what situations you might sexually share with someone else.
So when we talk about sex ed, we generally just mean sex. We actually mean intercourse. But sex ed is so much more comprehensive than that, correct?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, it's a good point. Historically, people think about, sex ed, and they think about maybe intercourse and positions and all that kind of stuff. And that is certainly very narrow. I mean, that's only one particular type of behavior of sharing touch. And so what we're looking at a more comprehensive approach, not only the physiology, the anatomy, but also things that how culture presents sexuality, and how society depicts it, sources of information, being able to understand how media and the website oftentimes present sexuality, and then understanding, the particular aspects of relationships. So the physiological aspects is only one small aspect at all. I mean, it's mainly talking about, the physiology and the anatomy of the reproductive system, but it's much more than that. It's understanding the role and meaning of sexuality in one's life.
We are talking to Bill Yarber of the Kinsey Institute. We're talking about sex ed. We want your questions. Call us at 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. What does sex ed curriculum in your school look like? What do you want it to look like? And Bill, when we come back, we're going to talk about how hard or easy it is for parents, especially of young teens, to have those conversations with their kids when they are uncomfortable or when their kids go and hide under their beds. It's The Morning Show. It's the Ideas Network, and this is The Morning Show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're talking with our guest about how we're getting it right and how we're missing the mark when it comes to sex ed in this country. Bill Yarber is a provost professor at the Department of Applied Health Science and a senior scientist at the Kinsey Institute at Indiana University. We're taking your calls this morning, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@WPR.org. tweet us at WPR Mornings. Are you in favor of comprehensive sex ed in your schools? Are you in favor of an abstinence-only sex ed policy? Did you opt your child in or out of sex ed program in your school district? And how do you teach your kids about sexuality? 800-642-1234. Bill, we ended with me talking about kids maybe being uncomfortable. And you know, I get that what you're saying, that you talk to a five-year-old about their bodies, and everything for a five-year-old is about their bodies. And they're totally, they don't have any hang-ups about what sex might be. Once they turn about 11 or 12, they start feeling things. And a lot of kids don't particularly want their mom or dad talking to them about sex. They go into their rooms and they pull the covers over their heads. So how, and parents really aren't really comfortable with this either. So how do parents navigate this so that they can have the conversations with their kids who are kind of plugging their ears and going, no, not from my mom. I don't want to hear this from my mom.
Well, I think you accurately represent a common problem, common issue. I mean, parents should be askable about things dealing with sexuality. They may feel uncomfortable about it. They may not know what to say. They may fear that they may say something that affirms sexuality or pleasure, and then the child will, or the young person will start to be becoming sexual with someone else. And then sometimes, again, as you say, the child himself or herself is not comfortable with talking about with their parent. And so that's why I think we need other organizations in the community, schools, for example, or other health organizations to, you know, step up and fill that gap. The probability of a parent being askable, I think, is increased whenever if they have a sort of a culture or an atmosphere in the house in which things can be talked about. I mean, if a young child begins to touch himself or herself in a genital area, and the parent responds by slapping the hand or jerking the hand away and so forth, things like that could probably begin to give a message to the child that this is something that we don't talk about, that this is something that's really bad and negative. And so they may not feel comfortable or safe in approaching a parent. So I think a parent can acknowledge the fact that you see on media, you see on television or movies that, you know, that begin to talk about sexual issues or their situations portraying that they can use opportune times to talk about that and begin to set an atmosphere that it's affirming of what sexuality is without having such a uneasy or a negative aspect about it. But a lot of parents, you're right, do not feel comfortable about that. And so then they can do some reading. They could do some maybe talking with other parents how they address these issues.
How important is modeling, not sexual behavior for your kids, but modeling loving behavior for your kids?
Well, I think it's a good point. It's very important because they can see that, you know, that affection and appreciation and love another individual is a very healthy kind of aspect of family and for couples. And so that, I think, would even help them becoming more comfortable about talking about things related to sexuality.
We are talking about sex ed in schools and taking your calls. Brad from Eau Claire, welcome to the program, Brad.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
I haven't heard all of the lead-in information, but as a father of four daughters, the older two did go to public school for the full 12 years. And the second daughter one day came home from school crying. This was in about fifth grade, and we're trying to figure out, you know, what is going on. And she said that day in class during sex ed period, she was told or instructed never to sit on my father's lap again.
Oh.
And until that point, they had had a wonderful relationship. And that, needless to say, that was very heartbreaking. It was disruptive in my family, and very upsetting to my father, who was a public school teacher. He, even in his mind, said that was unacceptable. We did confront the school and the sex ed teacher and department about this, and they essentially said, well, we're glad you have a healthy family, but probably your daughter's other classmates, most of them don't.
Most of them don't. That's an interesting assumption to make.
So at that point, we decided to pull our children from public school, and now we're just finishing up with the fourth daughter. She'll be a junior this coming year, and it's been the best choice we've ever made. There are so many excellent materials without relying on government to go in training your family as to what they should think and how they should feel, and I think it's just too sensitive a topic to leave up to other people that may or may not have even an accurate perception of your family dynamics.
Fascinating. Thank you, Brad, for that. This brings up a lot of issues, Bill. First of all, can teachers possibly go over the line when they're warning about sexual predatory behavior? And also, if you were going to pull it back and have only families train people, what if you do have sexually predatory behavior in your family and you're training your kids about sex ed?
Well, I'm sorry to hear about that, but one particular circumstance that would be, I think, very extraordinary, not the uniform practice within within sexuality education. The this is a very delicate and very tricky type of situation, and with all the Me Too movement now is becoming much more in the forefront, but it's always been an issue that's been very, very delicate. And I don't know if there's exact answers or not. You know, as he was describing this, I was thinking in my mind that this particular issue about sexuality, the partnership of the home and other organizations like a school, or particularly maybe even the faith community, can really be valuable. Hopefully, primarily, that this type of information in the boundaries of one's body and so forth is handled at home. Many don't have that type of discussion, and so we look for other sources. And not always is that, I think, just like anything, may not be perfect. There may be situations where there was overreaction.
Right.
And I think it just, you know, I think it really solidifies the fact that the role of the parents or the guardians to really be able to talk about that. In some communities, some now have sexuality education programs for parents, and so that they can talk about what the ways to talk about these particular issues.
We are taking calls on the morning show talking about sex ed. John from Madison, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me. Research has kind of shown that humans are generally designed to be raised by groups of adults rather than just one or two. I was always really, which kind of makes me understand why, I was always like really uncomfortable going directly to my parents about something like sexuality, because, you know, then my sexuality is under their scrutiny and they can, you know, they're under the control of it, kind of a thing, and I'm not really given agency.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the school is kind of replacing those tribal elders, which was always much easier, because then, you know, there's lower stakes. This person only has, you know, control over my grade, not whether I can go out of the house tonight. I think it's important that we have teachers that teach about this stuff, and good teachers, and
right,
like sex positive teachers, because the ones that I had kind of sent me on a religious bent for a little bit too long and kind of messed up a little bit of my adolescence.
So that's interesting too. Thank you, John. Now, this is the second question or comment we have had, Bill, that says, yeah, bad teachers made it bad for me or made it bad for my family. What are we doing to train teachers to teach sex ed correctly?
Well, that's an accurate portrayal of a major problem that we have in this field. I mean, we do not historically send teachers into science classrooms without adequate preparation. Several courses in college, not only on content, but, you know, methodology. But oftentimes we'll have persons teach the sexuality education unit in health classes, for example, or maybe even biology classes, who have no academic preparation. And so a lot of teacher preparation courses do not require courses in sexuality and courses in the pedagogy, the teaching of sexuality. And that is a severe limitation. But it's not like, you know, a teacher saying or being told, here you have to talk about fitness and here's a book and you read about it and you talk about it. It's different when you talk about sexuality because we've got all these cultural feelings and messages about sexuality. And then the individual does, too. Research that I have done of teachers in Indiana indicated that the most strongest predictor of a teacher doing a more comprehensive approach is whether that individual is comfortable with his or her sexuality. It was not whether they were married or single. It was not whether they were a parent. It was not their age. But it was whether they were comfortable about their own sexuality. So that, you know, those kind of things oftentimes just don't evolve without any kind of academic addressing that or preparation. So I think, you know, this is an issue of inadequate professional preparation of people who teach a very challenging topic in our culture. I mean, the world is sexual, but all kinds of mixed messages. And for a young person to be able to figure all that out and navigate through all that kinds of information is very difficult, and sometimes they make erroneous choices, which is very common, of course, of individuals.
Okay, we are getting to the end of the program, Bill. Bill Yarber is a senior scientist at the Kinsey Institute for Research in Sex. He's been talking to us about sex ed. Coming up tomorrow at this time, we're going to explore flea markets. I'm Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.